You're listening to The Range, Gardner-Webb University streaming and on-demand radio. My name is Jeff Powell. Dr. Anna Hamrick is in the studio with us today from our nurse practitioner program here at Gardner-Webb University. We call this a continuing series of conversations, House Calls, and today's topic is hepatitis C.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
You know, I've been watching TV, and there's been a lot of talk on TV recently about hepatitis C and the fact that a lot of baby boomers are having to deal with this, maybe from activities that happened decades ago. Okay. So first of all, I think what I'd like to talk to you about and kind of get my head around is there's hepatitis A and B and C and maybe some more. Can you kind of tell us what hepatitis C is, how it's different from some of these other forms specifically?
Okay. You're right. There's been a really nice media campaign regarding hepatitis. It's hard to drive down the interstate and not see a billboard regarding hepatitis. So I think it's a question that a lot of people may have. You're right. There are different types of hepatitis. Hepatitis is a virus. Simply put, hepatitis means inflammation of the liver.
Okay.
That's what that word would mean. And there's hepatitis A, B, C. Those are the ones you hear most often. Each type of hepatitis is caused by a different virus, and it's spread in different ways. The one that we'll probably talk most about today is hepatitis C. But just for a point of reference, hepatitis A typically doesn't cause a long-term infection, but it can make people very sick. Mm-hmm. Hepatitis B and C are those that are chronic and lifelong infections and can lead to serious health problems. And I think that's what we'll discuss more about today.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, there are certain risky behaviors that cause most hepatitis C infections. But when you first get the infection, because you use that term chronic there, when you first get the infection, you may not even know you're sick.
That's right.
And it can be, again, decades later before you find out you have hepatitis C.
Yes. And I think that's why we've seen this media push and this publicity from the CDC or Center for Disease Control. Most people with chronic hepatitis don't even know they're infected. Mm. Some statistics say that more than 4 million Americans are living with chronic hepatitis in the United States, and most of them don't know they're infected. Mm-hmm. And you can actually live with chronic hepatitis for decades without any symptoms or even feeling sick.
So Does that mean a lot of people will have it, never know they have it, pass away from other diseases or complications? Or is it something that can become very, very acute and can even be deadly? Is that correct?
That's right. So talking about hepatitis C specifically, the longer people live with hepatitis C undiagnosed and untreated, the more likely they are to develop those serious life-threatening liver diseases. And you kind of alluded to this earlier, but the target population that we want to talk to this morning is that baby boomer generation. Mm-hmm. People born from 1945 to 1965 really should be tested. Baby boomers are 5 times more likely to have hepatitis C than any other adults.
Why do we think that is?
Well, it's not completely understood why the baby boomers have high rates of hepatitis C. Most boomers are believed to have become infected in the 1970s and 1980s. That's when we saw the higher rates of hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of different ways that people become infected. Hepatitis C is usually spread when blood from a person infected with hepatitis C enters the body of somebody who is not infected. And this can happen in a variety of different ways. One of the biggest reason is that, and a lot of people don't know this, but comprehensive testing of blood supply didn't take place until 1992.
Right.
So if you received a blood transfusion or organ transplant prior to 1992, you're at higher risk for having hepatitis C. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about people with a history of clotting disorders who may have gotten blood products. It's kind of that window between 1987 and 1992 is where we got stronger and more stringent with our testing of blood products. Mm-hmm. Other people that are at high risk are people that shared needles or other equipment to inject drugs. Unfortunately, that's a very efficient way to transmit the hepatitis C virus. We know that people have also become infected with hepatitis C from body piercing or tattoos, sometimes in the prison system or in other unlicensed or informal facilities.
Uh-huh. So is that something that, because a lot of people now get tattoos, it's very popular today, and it's also, there's, you know, a drug epidemic in the country right now as well, including heroin, et cetera.
Yes.
So is this something we're going to see another 20, 30 years down the road, another kind of expansion of the number of cases? Or the fact that we screen things better going to take care of some of that?
Well, I think the regulations, to speak of the tattoo industry, the regulations on the tattoo industry are much more stringent than they were in the past. But if you're getting a tattoo in somebody's garage, that's a little suspicious.
Right.
You probably want to think differently about that. So the precautions, the sanitation of the tattoo industry, we're talking about multiple dimensions of chance for transmission of this disease. But hopefully with some of the campaigns that are being rolled out right now, we're recognizing it. And hepatitis B and C are treatable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really the important thing, is that people should get tested. And you can get treated and cured before you develop some of those long-term diseases.
Now, I can imagine some people seeing the sort of the media campaign that's out there right now from the CDC, or maybe listening to this this podcast, and they're going, well, you know, I was never an intravenous drug user. I was never sexually promiscuous. So I'm in the clear. But you're saying that if you had some types of surgery prior to those dates that you mentioned, then you should probably get tested too.
If there's a chance that you had a blood transfusion, or you obviously would know if you had an organ transplant, prior to that 1987-1992 window, you should get tested. But really, the CDC is recommending that anybody who was born between the years of 1945 to 1965 should really be tested.
Okay.
It's a simple blood test your primary care provider can do.
Mm-hmm. So everybody born in those dates, between those dates, should get tested regardless.
That's the current recommendation, regardless if you have symptoms. And there's some, there's assessment tool that's online that's easily accessible. Just if you answer yes to any of these questions, you may be at higher risk.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been diagnosed with a clotting factor disorder? That puts you at higher risk that you've probably had a transfusion. Have you ever been diagnosed with a chronic liver disease? Were you or at least one of your parents born outside of the United States? Do you currently live or have you lived with somebody that has been diagnosed with hepatitis? Because we do know that it's sexually transmitted and it's a bloodborne pathogen. Have you been diagnosed with any other sexually transmitted disease that puts you at higher risk for hepatitis, including HIV and AIDS? If you're a man, have you had sexual encounters with other men? Do you currently or in the past inject drugs? Again, that population, were you born between 1945 and 1965?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever receive a blood transfusion or organ transplant between before July 1992? And the other thing is, if none of those fit you and you say, I don't need to worry about this, do you or have you traveled outside the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're at higher risk in those other countries that don't screen for this, don't treat. And excuse me, if you do plan on traveling outside of the United States, then you can be vaccinated and kind of be preventative of some of these diseases.
Well, you said something a moment ago that I think is very important to emphasize. And that is that if you do end up, you know, testing and you find out you have hepatitis C, that it's very treatable. There are medications that can, in most cases, take care of it.
That's right. So getting tested could save your life. Life-saving treatments are available for chronic hepatitis B, and new treatments are available that could cure hepatitis C. But getting tested is the only way to know that you're infected.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the takeaway from all this is to get tested. If you were born between those dates or meet any of those other criteria you just mentioned, and it's a simple thing to do at the doc, you can, you know, you go to your doctor, they can do a little blood test really quickly and easily. And if you find out you have been exposed or infected, then start the treatments.
That's right. You want to protect your liver. In my work with palliative care, I've seen end-stage liver disease, hepatitis, liver cancer, cirrhosis, and it's a very, ugly disease. It's a miserable state that those people are in. And I've experienced it and witnessed it in my own close network of friends and family. So this is important. You want to protect your liver. Not everybody's going to have it. So we don't want to create panic and fear right. in everybody, mm-hmm. but it is something to be aware of. And if you are at high risk, go ahead and be tested and get the treatment. Like we've said, some people can live with years and years with chronic hepatitis C and not have any symptoms and not know they're infected. But when symptoms appear, often they're a sign of the advanced liver disease. So if we can be preventative and proactive, I think that's the right approach.
Yeah, don't wait until you're feeling the symptoms, because at that point it could be too late. So you want to get tested early.
That's right.
All right. Well, if you have any questions or comments for us, feel free to email us here at the station. It's info, I-N-F-O, at wgwg.org.
Thank you, Jeff.